Good morning, everyone. I'm assuming everyone can hear me. You're all on mute, I don't know. Good, you're nodding your head, that's great. Okay. Welcome to the new series, and also welcome to the new term. We're continuing for the moment on Zoom and on Facebook and so on. But it's great to get together and to learn something and to discuss. I think it's actually more important now than ever, given that we're living still in times which are uncertain. You know, I think in a way, what's happening now in New South Wales is even worse than having a definitive thing like in Victoria, because, you know, one of the things that the Talmud tells us is there's no greater joy than clarity. And right now we're going through sort of very unclear and uncertain days, up and down. So I think it's really good that we can get together, strengthen each other, encourage each other, and just talk about growth and have a discussion together. Because as we've said before, when we're in uncertain times, we need to connect to the world of certainty. And the world of certainty is the world of our values, the world of the ability to keep learning, to keep growing, and so on and so forth. That's always certain, and it's always constant. So, welcome to the new course. The new series that we're doing is called Healthy Living, and it's based on a book. I did this, you know, last time we based on a book. I'm going to do it again this time. It's based on a book called Life in the Balance. This is what the book looks like, in case you can see it. It's a book written by... Let me explain. So, you've heard me quote Dr. David Pelkowitz before. He's a very, very special human being. He's a person I know him personally. He's a leading psychologist in the States. He's also a religious man and a great Jewish scholar. He's a Torah scholar, and what he does in his talking and in his writing, he often brings a very strong and religious point of view and perspective to the discussion, but he also matches it up with a lot of often fascinating psychological research and up-to-date studies, which he's obviously very aware of. Very, very well read, very, very smart person. And in 2014, he published a book with his father. His father is also a rabbi. His father's name is Rabbi Raphael Pelkowitz. And that's the book, Life in the Balance. This is the book, Torah Perspective on Positive Psychology, written by his father, Rabbi Raphael Pelkowitz, and himself, Dr. David Pelkowitz. And I found the book so far very fascinating, and I want to spend each week on a chapter. I'm not going to go specifically in order, but I'm going to spend each week on a different chapter, sharing with you some of the insights, sharing with you, adding some ideas, and just discussing the concepts that come up in the book. So today I'm actually going to take chapter 2. And chapter 2 is entitled Chesed, the concept of kindness. And the subtitle of the book, of the chapter, is Cultivating the Habit of Kindness and Giving. Now, the truth is that it's very appropriate that we talk about it now. Just to give a bit of background, of course, as you might be aware, that currently in the Jewish calendar, we're now in the period of time called the 9 days. These are the 9 days which started yesterday, Rosh Chodesh Av, the first day of the month of Av. And it leads up to Tisha B'Av, the 9th of Av, which is next Thursday. We're still going to have a session next Thursday, and I'll announce that a bit later. The 9th of Av, of course, is the day that we mourn the destruction of both temples and other Jewish tragedies. And we have this period of the 3 weeks, particularly the 9 days leading up to Tisha B'Av, where it's days of restriction, days of mourning, days of reflection, days where we take note and are mindful to remember the Jewish suffering and the destruction and Jewish tragedy that has happened throughout the time. But it's also a time to reflect on the cause of the destruction. And the Talmud, of course, tells us, and we've talked about this before, that the Beit HaMikdash, the temple, was destroyed because of Sinat Chinam, because of baseless hatred, because of division, because of disunity. And therefore, taking the period during the 9 days to discuss the concept of giving, generosity, kindness, is of course really opportunity. It's the antidote to the destruction. It's what will bring the rebuilding, hopefully very soon, And in fact, Chazal, our rabbis in the Talmud, tell us that tzedakah, kindness, giving, charity, and so on and so forth, mekarevet et ha-geula, brings closer the final redemption. So it's a good chapter to talk about today. So in course of the discussion, I want to share some of the insights that are in the book and some amazing studies that he quotes in the book, and so on. So let's begin with the foundation. And the foundation is that in Jewish literature and Jewish thinking, now we've talked about giving before, I just want to sort of add to it today and give a bit of perspective. So in Jewish literature and in Jewish discussion, Jewish ideas, giving, the concept of giving, kindness, is incredibly central and incredibly critical, right? So just to share a few examples of how that's reflected. So in the Talmud, we have an interesting discussion, an interesting expression, and it's a quote from a great sage of the Talmud called Rav Simlai, right? And Rav Simlai said that if you look at the Torah, meaning the five books of the Chumash, you'll see that it begins with kindness and ends in kindness. What does he mean? He said it begins with a performance of kindness in the story of Adam and Eve. Now, the story of Adam and Eve, of course, is that after they sinned, and we're talking about people that failed and sinned, part of what they did was they ate from the tree of knowledge. They became self-aware and self-conscious. They realized their nakedness. They hid. God confronts them, punishes them for transgressing. But it also says that God made for Adam and his wife and Eve, he made garments for them. Alei te'ena, garments made out of fig tree and so on. And he clothed them, right? So in other words, the Torah actually begins that even kindness and kindness to someone who God wasn't particularly happy with at the time, people who had failed, and yet it begins with that kindness. And then the end of the Chumash, the very end, the last few verses of the Chumash, talk about another act of kindness, which the Talmud says we need to learn from. Vayikbar otah, that God buried Moshe Rabbeinu. And in fact, the Talmud elsewhere says that we have to learn from the attributes of God. We see in the Torah that he visited the sick. We need to visit the sick. He was kind to Adam and Eve. We need to be kind. He buried the dead. We need to bury the dead. He comforted the mourner in the case of Yitzchak when he lost Abraham, his father. We need to do the same way, same thing, and so on and so forth. So that's the beginning and end of the Chumash, is all surrounded around the kind of concept. Now, there was a great Kabbalist, a commentator called Rabbeinu Bahaya. Rabbeinu Bahaya says that the attribute of kindness, I'll just quote to you from the book, he quotes Rabbeinu Bahaya, he says, the attribute of kindness pervades all of existence in its entirety, the heavenly realms and the lowly realms, and these realms have no possibility of continued being without the concept of kindness. Everything needs kindness, and kindness has no end or boundary. In fact, King David in Tehillim, King David in Psalms, says a famous expression. He says, "Olam chesed yibaneh." The world is built on kindness. It was built on kindness. It was kindness from God, but it's built in the present tense on the concept of kindness and giving. It is kept alive, its stability endures because of the concept of giving, because of the concept of kindness. But here's the critical perspective which I want to sort of share with you, and that's based on a chapter in the book. We need to understand a couple of things. First of all, that when we talk about chesed and tzedakah, kindness, charity, generosity. Now, the truth is, as we've explained previously, that whenever one does something good, especially if it's giving, whenever you give something to someone to help them, no matter what your motive is, it's always good, or almost always good at least, right? Unless it's manipulative or negative. Because, you know, whether you're helping someone for exactly the right reason, or maybe you want to be recognized, or you're even helping them begrudgingly, or you help them, you know, reluctantly, whatever the case is, the truth is that when you help someone, you're good. In fact, I've mentioned this before, the Talmud says that when you lose a coin and a poor person picks up that coin, you get a mitzvah. In other words, you don't even intend to do it. Your motive wasn't there altogether, completely in your absence. Nevertheless, it's still considered a good thing and you get credit, so to speak, for the good act. That is true. However, when we talk about cultivating kindness, when we talk about real chesed is not just giving someone something. That's the first thing we need to realize, and we'll see what that means in a minute. The second thing we need to understand is that chesed, kindness, is not just giving people things. So it's not just about giving people things, and it's not, or giving people any things. It might even be giving people time, which is all part of kindness, by the way. Kindness doesn't mean giving people money. Kindness means helping someone, supporting someone, giving them emotional support, giving them time, whatever the case is. But it's not just the act of giving that is kindness, in this context, in the context of this discussion at least. When we talk about, and the discussion that we're having now, about the concept of chesed, the concept of cultivating the trait of kindness, it's much more of a paradigm. It's a way of life. And it's a form of growth. And that's what I wanted to bring out. Kindness is always good, but engaging in kindness really needs to be a form of self-growth. Let's bring this out in a particular way, and I'm basing it on an idea that he brings in this chapter. So as I said before, you know, we're currently in the 3 weeks, the 9 days. We focused and historically focused on the Beit HaMikdash, the temple. The building of the temple, of course, in Jerusalem was on the Temple Mount, but it originated, the mitzvah of building a temple, originated in the desert. When the Jews came out of Egypt, they were in the desert, they were becoming a nation, they became a nation, and then God, shortly after the giving of the Torah, instructs them to build a tabernacle, to build a Mishkan. When he built that Mishkan, the Pasuk says, the verse tells us, "V'asu li mikdash," God says, "Make for me a sanctuary, and I will dwell among them." And the commentators asked, "What do you mean?" The phraseology is problematic. It should say, "Build for me a mikdash, build for me a temple, v'shachanti betocho, and I will dwell in it." But of course, as we mentioned many times, the concept is that v'shachanti betocho means God said, "I'm going to dwell within each and every person." In each and every person, meaning that each person we all build our own internal temple. The Mishkan, the tabernacle that was built in the desert, created the model for us to understand how we should build our own temple, how we build our own sanctuary, so to speak, that God could be invited to us, that we can make room for God, that God can come in to our existence. So let's have a look at a fascinating thing that happened in the Mishkan. The commentaries explain that in the Ethics of the Fathers, it talks about three pillars upon which the world exists. So, Ashlosha Dvarim Olam Omed, the Ethics of the Fathers says, on three things the world stands. There are three pillars of existence. What are the pillars of existence? Torah, Avodah, Gmilut Chasadim. Torah means Torah learning, gaining knowledge. We've explained this many times. Knowledge is a foundation of growth, foundation of the world. Avodah, service, which in the modern context is translated as prayer. In the time of the temple, it was more sacrifices. And Gmilut Chasadim, the concept of acts of kindness. Those are the three pillars of existence. Where do we find it in the Mishkan? So, of course, Torah is simple. The holiest spot of the Mishkan and subsequently the holiest spot of the Beit HaMikdash was the Holy of Holies, which housed the Ark. The Ark was the box in which the Ten Commandments and the Torah rested, was housed. So that's the representative of the foundation of the concept of knowledge. Avodah is service, serving God, which is prayer, but in the temple it was more in the form of sacrifices, which of course the Mishkan, the Mizbeach, the altar, the temple was surrounded around the daily offerings, the daily sacrifices. So that's Torah and Avodah. Where do we find Gemilut Chasadim? Where do we find acts of kindness? Where's the concept of kindness in the Mishkan? So follow me for a moment here. When God instructed, it's a very beautiful idea, but I need to explain the context. When God instructed Moses for the Jewish people to build a Mishkan, the Mishkan was built out of beams. So many, many beams on three sides. It was open on the fourth side. Each beam standing next to each other, wooden beams in a foundation, sockets, silver sockets. But in order to create a stable structure, right? In order to create a stable structure, God instructed that they should insert within the beams. Remember, like each beam stood next to each other. Imagine like sort of books next to each other. They should insert in the beams what we call a Briach HaTichon, the central bolt, the central beam. In other words, there was a beam that went through all the beams to hold them all together and create a stable structure. But according to the Talmud, according to the way it's explained in the Chumash, this was a miraculous beam. It was a wooden beam that went through all the sockets, but it was called Briach HaTichon Mavriach Min HaKatzeh El HaKatzeh. It went all the way around, all the way around. Now that's an impossibility in the physical sense. I mean, you can't put a solid beam through a structure and expect it to turn a corner. But this one did. This one did. It went through the beams, turned the corner, was bent, even though it was solid wood, bent through the second side, bent through the third side, and came out the other way. So it went all the way around the Mishkan through the beams. It was this long piece of cedar wood that they took, turned it into a long pole, a solid pole of wood, and it went through all the beams, turned the corner, came out the other side, through the middle of the beams, and created a stability, a strength to the structure of the Mishkan. Says an amazing midrash. Where did this beam come from? Where did this beam come from? So, there's another midrash that tells us, just bear with me here because you'll see where we're going in a minute, that when Jacob went down to Egypt, when God told Jacob to go down to Egypt to meet Joseph, he alluded to him that you are going down for a long time. You're going to be there for some time. You're going to be there for decades, hundreds of years. You and your family. However, God promised him, when you come up from afterwards, after a period of time, I will take you out and I will come up with you. In other words, Jacob foresaw what's happening. He knew that he's going down to meet his son, but really what's happening is him and his family are leaving Israel and going into exile, but there's a promise and hope from God that there will be an exodus. So what did Yaakov do? Jacob foresaw, says the Midrash, that when the Jews come out of Egypt and they come into the desert, they're going to have to create a Mishkan. They're going to have to create a structure, a tabernacle. And they're going to need wood. So he did a couple of things. He planted cedar trees all along the way, knowing that it'll grow much longer. And he took wood with him down to Egypt. Which, by the way, on a side note, is a beautiful idea, because the whole time that the Jewish people were in Egypt, they always had the storage of wood, and it was always a symbol of hope that one day they will leave and they will take the wood with them and build a sanctuary for God. But that's not the subject of the discussion. So they had this wood supply with them that they took out of Egypt and that assisted them to build the Mishkan. One of the pieces of wood that Jacob brought down to Egypt was a massive wooden pole taken from the tree of Abraham, the famous tree of Abraham. What was the tree of Abraham? The pasuk tells us, the verse tells us, that Abraham settled in Be'er Sheva, where he lived. Vayita Eshel, he planted a tree in the city of Be'er Sheva. And that was the tree where he served his guests. That tree was a symbol of Abraham's chesed. You know, Abraham was a prototype of chesed. He personified the concept of kindness. He was hospitable. He was generous. He always wanted to give. The symbol of Abraham's kindness, the symbol of Abraham's hospitality and generosity was symbolized by that tree, which was referred to in the Chumash as Eshel, the word Eshel. Now, the word Eshel is made up of three letters, Aleph, Shin and Lamed, which the Talmud says stands for Achila, Shtiya and Leviya. Food, drink, and then accompanying the person as he leaves your house to make sure that he or she are safe. So Yaakov Avinu, Jacob, takes this piece of wood. He takes this long piece of wood from Abraham's tree to Egypt. The Jews are there for 210 years. They eventually leave Egypt and take the wood with them. They build a Mishkan. And then God says you need to insert this long pole called the Briach HaTichon, which will miraculously be flexible and turn the corner, to hold the stability, to make the Mishkan strong. Which pole of wood was inserted into the Mishkan? The one that came from Avraham's tree, says the Midrash. What's the idea behind it? The one that came from Avraham's tree, this pole, which was a symbol of generosity, was inserted into the Mishkan to create stability. Why? Because that tree, that piece of wood, that was the symbol of kindness, of generosity, of giving, was the formula of what kindness really means. How so? It taught us two things. That kindness, first of all, creates stability. If someone has to create strength, stability, firmness, endurance, a person's life experience can only be strong if it's based on kindness. However, what does kindness mean? Kindness is a strength, but kindness also represents flexibility. Kindness means not to be rigid. Kindness means not to be stuck in ourself. Like the Briah HaTichon, like the pole that was put into the Mishkan that was able to turn in order to fit the direction of the Mishkan. Kindness is not just the act of giving. Many people give, but they remain stuck in who they are. Kindness means to leave yourself, to leave your rigidity, to leave your self-imprisonment, to leave your stuckness, and to put yourself beyond yourself, to make way for someone else, for something else. That's what kindness really is. In fact, going back to Abraham, because we said this bolt was Abraham's piece of wood. One of the things that Abraham is always praised for is his hospitality. But the Rambam explains that the main part of Abraham's hospitality is not that he gave people food. It's not that he gave people drink. It's that he walked them to the door and he saw them on their way. Why? Because when you give someone something, that's giving them something. That's fine. That doesn't show you connected to them. It doesn't show you've left your world to put yourself in their world. But when you see someone out of your house and you're worried about them and you're sensitive to their needs and you're looking out for them to make sure they're okay, and therefore you walk them out and you accompany them and you make them feel good and you make them feel wanted and you make them feel it was a pleasure to serve them and a pleasure to give them, and you want to make sure that they continue to be safe and you offer to just to make sure they're okay and so on and so forth. That's what Abraham was praised for, because chesed, kindness. And the discussion we're having today is that cultivating kindness is not just about doing acts of kindness. It's about becoming a kind person. Cultivating real kindness. And cultivating real kindness means to do something beyond yourself. To really put yourself in the other person's shoes. You know, we talked about this many times a long time ago. About often when people do acts of kindness, they forget about who they're being kind to. Right? You know, people visit people in the hospital, or you give someone something and you forget to think, is that what they need? Is that going to be to their benefit? Am I putting myself out of myself? Am I putting myself in their shoes to make sure that they feel good about it, to make sure they're not embarrassed, to make sure that they actually want my act of kindness, to make sure that if I'm visiting them in the hospital, do they want me there or are they tired? If I insist on a conversation, do they want to talk or would they rather just quiet time? Are they embarrassed, or do we keep their dignity intact, and so on and so forth? It's like the Talmud that says, as I mentioned many times, that someone who gives a coin to a poor person is blessed with 6 blessings, but if you make him feel good, you're blessed with 11 blessings. Right? In other words, kindness, which is the pillar of existence, one of the pillars, and was one of the pillars of the Mishkan, it represented in this bolt, in this piece of wood that went through the sides. It's not just about giving, but it's about becoming less about ourselves, less selfish, less egocentric, and more selfless, and more about others, and more about things that are beyond me or above me, and putting myself in a context of real growth, which means to go beyond who we are and put ourselves in other people's shoes. In other experiences, to be able to grow beyond who we are. You know, what's interesting is that there's a, and Dr. Pelkovitz mentions in the book, in this passage, he said there's a very well-known phrase, a well-known verse in Tanakh, in Micha. It says, one of the prophets said to the Jewish people, he says, what does God want from you? He wants you to be doers, la'asot mishpat, to doers of justice and lovers of kindness. And he says that the Chofetz Chaim, the great Chofetz Chaim, pointed out that when it comes to justice, it says a doer of justice. When it comes to kindness, it says a lover of kindness. You see, justice is something that we do, but kindness is not something we just do. Kindness has to become who we are. Kindness is something we pursue. Kindness is something that we love. Right? Because kindness, as we said before, is a lifestyle. It's not just something that we do once in a while. Kindness, just like Olam Chesed Yibaneh, as we said before, just like the world is built on kindness, we are built on kindness. We are held together as an effective, valuable, deep human being through the concept of kindness. That's why we need that flexibility. That's why we need that bolt to be the anchor, the pillar of stability that keeps us together, but only works when we do it in a way where we can be flexible and not rigid, and we can go beyond ourselves. Because the Torah tells us this, because it's not an easy thing. Why is it not an easy thing? Some people are natural givers, but the truth is that for most people, and to an extent true with all people, the way God designed us was that the natural default instinct of the human being is self-interest, self-preservation, right? As the Talmud says, Adam karov etzel atzmo, a person is related to themselves. It's a funny expression. What does it mean to be related to yourself? In other words, we're biased towards ourselves. We're involved in self-interest. It's very hard to be objective about ourselves because we're subjective. We're always right. So therefore, that's part of who we are. Now, God also created us with a selfless spark, with a part of us that wants to engage in the moral imperative of helping other people, going beyond ourselves. However, in order to access that part of ourselves, right, in order to overcome the natural tendency towards selfishness, we actually have to work really hard to suppress the tendency of being self-absorbed and to pursue chesed, to love chesed, to become a kind person, to become someone who actually is able to go beyond themselves and to love connecting and giving and helping and supporting other people. You know, he doesn't say this in the book, but I'll just share with you an idea. It brings such rich living if we can do this. So I'll tell you an interesting little symbolism that's hinted in something the Talmud says. Again, you know, I said it's the 9 days, so we focus a little bit on the temple. So in times of old, in Jerusalem, especially during the first temple, times of King David and Solomon and so on, Jews would come 3 times a year, including, and they would also come Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah, they would come to the Beit HaMikdash, they would come to the temple. And we are taught, especially on Yom Kippur, what used to happen was, the Jewish people would assemble in the courtyard of the temple, and they would watch and listen to the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, doing the service and the rituals of the temple that day. Now, of course, it was a little bit miraculous because how could they all fit into the huge courtyard of the temple, but still, there were so many people. Part of the service of the day was that when they would hear the Kohen Gadol declare the name of God, they would bow down. They would fall to the floor, as we do on Yom Hashanah and Yom Kippur, to remember that. They would bow down towards God. And the Talmud says that one of the miracles that happened in the temple was the following, and I'll tell you the Hebrew phrase because it's important, and then I'll translate it. It says, Omdim tzfufim umishtachavim revachim. They would stand, when they would stand, they would be very squashed, but when they bent down, there was plenty of space, which obviously is an incredible miracle. But the commentaries say, that in this phrase is hinted an unbelievable thing. The truth is, this miracle is the miracle that's possible with all of us. Why? there are two types of mindsets that a person can live in. One is omdim, one is mishtachavim, standing or bowing. What does standing mean? When I stand straight, that means I am who I am. Omdim, the standing straight firmly, is a symbol of I'm not moving. I'm stationary. I'm inflexible. This is who I am, and that's it. Mishtachavim, to bow down, is a symbol of flexibility. It's a symbol of humility. Omdim, standing, is a symbol of arrogance and therefore being trapped and stuck in who I am. Hishtachava, bowing down, is a symbol of humility. It's a symbol to be flexible, a symbol to submit to something else, to surrender to something higher, and so on. Comes along the Talmud and says, Omdim, when a person is standing upright, when a person is arrogant, when a person is stuck, when a person is inflexible, tzfufim, it becomes very squashy. Very hard to tolerate other people. Very hard to entertain the needs of other people. Very hard to put up with other people. Very hard to, not for other people to irritate you. Right? So that's why omdim, when you stand, tzfufim, it's very squashy. But mishtachavim, when a person bows down, when a person is humble, when a person is engages in flexibility and humility, suddenly mishtach revachim, there's plenty of place. There's place for others, there's place for other ideas, there's place for other people, there's place to consider someone else's needs, there's place to stop thinking about myself and not take myself so seriously and think about someone else. That's what the depth of that saying of the Talmud is. And as I said before, you know, during this time this week, and I think, you know, we talk, everything's by divine providence. So we're talking now during these 9 days, it's something we need to really reflect on because the Talmud says the Beit HaMikdash, the temple, was destroyed because of baseless hatred. And we always need to understand, we've talked about this before, what does baseless hatred actually mean? No one will ever admit that they hate someone with no basis. No one ever will admit that they don't want to help someone because there's no basis. No one will ever admit that. They'll always have a rationale. They'll always have a reason. And in the Hasidic philosophers explain, yes, of course you'll have a reason, but that's a reason that comes later. The real reason that we cannot tolerate someone else, the real reason why there's certain people that just absolutely grate us and irritate us and annoy us, and we sort of can't bear to be in the same room with them, is our own insecurity, our own arrogance, our own stuckness. Because if we really were humble, we'd put up with everyone. It doesn't mean we'd have to be everyone's best friend, but it does mean that we can tolerate something way beyond ourselves. So that's where baseless hatred comes from. Where it was all a story, as you know, we've told the story many times of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa that destroyed the temple. It's all happened from a story of a person that had such an enemy that he couldn't even bear to allow him to remain in his party. Even though he offered to pay for his own meal and half the meal and the whole meal, but the person was just, I can't stand him, he's got to leave. He can't be in my presence. That's omdim. So when we talk about cultivating kindness, we're not just talking about giving people things. We're talking about making room for people. Loving kindness. Going beyond ourselves. Now, of course, when we talk about that concept of real chesed, therefore, Dr. Pelkowitz in his book has a whole section in that chapter where, of course, he connects it to the concept which we spoke about at the end of last term, the idea of empathy, which is so critically important. And he quotes psychological research, which has repeatedly found that empathy actually is the, listen, I'm just quoting, empathy is the primary force driving the engine that motivates people to help others in distress. In other words, real chesed, real kindness, helping people in a real way is rooted by, as I said last time, noticing and relating and being sensitive and being aware and conscious of the needs and the presence of other people. In other words, and he quotes other studies, this is quite fascinating actually. He quotes studies, and I'm going to just quote this paragraph, in a more general sense, the ability to put oneself in the shoes of others has been found to be an essential predictor of marital satisfaction. Incredible. In other words, empathy is the driving force behind kindness to strangers. It's also a driving force behind healthy relationships, including marriage. Right? He says empathy has also been identified in the studies as one of the ingredients of effective parenting. You see, because that's also an interesting thing, because parenting is not about forcing my view on a child. Parenting is about guiding, inspiring, creating structure, But understanding what the child needs, for that you need to go beyond yourself. I've said that to many parents. Parenting is a form of self-growth, because you really need to be able to put yourself in the child's shoes to really know what's good for them. And just generally, it's a critical ingredient, a necessary prerequisite for effective interpersonal skills and the ability to resolve conflicts. Now, this is so important to reflect on, because in the last number of decades particularly, we've started living in a world where people are focused on superficiality, people are focused on their self-preservation and self-pleasure, and it's become, as we know, quite a me world. And as a result, and this is just not a theory, as a result, I'm going to share with you some of the insights that Dr. Pelkowitz shares over here. That, and I mentioned this briefly last time, but as a result, the studies are now showing that empathy is dropping. And because empathy is dropping, generosity is dropping. And that's very sad. And that's why more than ever, this concept of cultivating kindness needs to be looked at and needs to be focused on. So he says the following. He says, in a fascinating study and a recent statistical analysis of the findings of 72 studies, there's a person called Sarah Kornruff. She's a social psychologist at the University of Michigan. She compared the levels of empathy and kindness among American college students over the last 30 years. And she found that in this age group, empathy had dropped about 40%. And therefore, similar reductions over the last several decades, also found by Kornrath in levels of kindness and helpfulness. That's very sad. That means we're raising generations of people who are less helpful, less supportive of others, less generous. Now, that's not to say that's all people. I mean, many people are still helpful. But also, this shouldn't be confused with people that do very big, one-time, showy type of huge acts of, I don't know, going to Africa and helping people. That's very good. It's very beautiful. But I think what we're talking about here is essential, ongoing, consistent kindness. Helping others that maybe no one else knows about. Just being helpful and supportive and ready to go beyond ourselves. That's what we're talking about here more than anything else. Right. Now, in the studies, they came up with a number of reasons of why sort of that's happening. Why is empathy happening? Things like exposure to the internet, increase in exposure to violent media. But also, as I mentioned last time, the third reason I came up with is the overall social environment today does not promote stillness. People are multitasking, people are much faster, people are speeding up communication, and therefore people are not slowing down to focus and to think about what's outside of their world. They're not focused enough to notice the other people, as I said last time, and therefore the needs and concerns of others has just diminished. And unfortunately, we've seen an increase in narcissism and self-centeredness, a reduction of generosity and true kindness, and what that leads to, as the studies show, it comes with a heavy price, right? And interestingly enough, the studies that were done in America were done with people who have a lot of resources at their disposal, more affluent communities, right? And they found that people there are less helpful, less supportive. Sometimes there's higher levels of depression, anxiety, higher levels of substance abuse. And it's almost counterintuitive. You think if you have more, if you have what you need, you're happier and maybe more ready to help others. But of course, we know it's not the way it is. Because if it's not dealt with properly, if we don't treat God's gifts properly, generally in life today, in the developed world, we live a life of luxury, essentially. We live a life of having things. And it doesn't bring to greater happiness. It doesn't bring to greater chesed. It doesn't bring to greater generosity either, right? And what happens is it actually comes with other things. It's apparently, according to the studies, there are three prices we play for that. Sometimes there are achievement pressures that specifically in those type of communities, which we see today in sort of the more Western communities, we find that there's an incredible pressure to achieve high scores, to be high achieving. And it's actually so unhealthy sometimes. Yes, of course, we should push our children and push our youth to achieve things and to be successful and so on and so forth, but not to define themselves by high achievement, because actually what it's bringing is tremendous stress, tremendous, you know, especially during this time. I just spoke to someone who helps HSC children. It's just incredible what's happening. I mean, especially with Corona, the stress levels that are going on, and it's not helpful. It just makes people less helpful and more self-absorbed. Another thing that's happening today is lack of parental time, right? Because parents are so high achievers and so busy that they're not spending enough time with their children. But those are side issues, not part of our discussion. But the third thing that they found among these communities that have enough resources is actually lack of required helpfulness. Because they found in their studies that people who have what they need but have become more self-absorbed are actually less involved in helping others. Why? Because having everything they needed often came with a marked absence of purpose. Emptiness and lack of purpose leads to not helping, because helping others, chesed, going beyond ourselves, facilitates, cultivates, makes room for the connection of that which is deep within us, which is the pursuit of meaning and the pursuit of purpose, which actually every human being has, as Viktor Frankl speaks about so much. But we need to be able to make room for that to come out, to cultivate it. And sometimes having everything, having luxury, having pleasure, having all the needs that we have, sometimes blocks that. It actually leads us towards a life of emptiness rather than purposeness, and therefore it becomes a great problem. Now the truth is that chesed and kindness, we never lose. The Midrash says, and it's based on a whole analysis of a verse in the book of Ruth. But the bottom line is that Rabbi Yehoshua taught us, and this is the way he said it, but it symbolizes a certain concept. He says, more than the master of the house does for the pauper does for the master of the house. Which is part of the humility of giving, by the way. In other words, the anchor, the backbone, the foundation of our human existence, meaningful human existence, is the concept of giving. Giving comes with going beyond ourselves. Giving comes with sacrifice. Giving comes with giving up. Giving comes with not taking ourselves so seriously, with being able to be flexible, be able to put ourselves on the side to make room for others. But at the end of the day, we need to also know that when we give, we get more than we give. The inner fulfillment, the sense of meaning and purpose, and therefore the ultimate sense of real happiness as opposed to pleasure, comes only with giving. So it's almost like we never lose for giving. Giving is about giving up, but actually we don't really give up. What we do is we're giving up only one side of ourselves. We're giving up that egocentric part. We're suppressing the selfishness part, the egocentricity that we have, the animalistic soul that we have. Yes, we're controlling it. We're suppressing it. But actually, in the long term, when we give, we gain more than we give. And this is what it says, Yoter mi masha balabais, more than the owner of the house gives to the poor person, the poor person gives to the owner of the house. Now, of course, as we talk about poor people, we're not talking about only poor people. As we've said many, many times, kindness is not only about giving to those that are poor. We are all poor in some areas. We all have deficits. Everyone has deficits. And we all have different needs, needs that are different to other people. Giving needs, giving to someone something that we have that the other doesn't have. Support, flexibility, help, emotional support. But doing it in a way where we look beyond ourselves, doing it in a way where we put ourselves into the other's world, that's real chesed. To put ourselves into the worlds of other people and really know how to give the chesed. That's what it's all about. And at the end of the day, people with true chesed, true kindness, something which we have to learn to cultivate, something which we have to learn to really internalize, we actually gain so much more than we get, because the fulfillment, the sense of meaning and purpose, the inner happiness that comes from being able to help and being able to support and being able to have meaning and purpose to our day is so unbelievably crucial. Not only is it crucial to our fulfillment of the relationships that we have with other people, but it's also central and critical to the inner happiness that we have in terms of our relationship with God, as we've talked about many times. There's a famous saying that we were always taught as kids. I think the teachers that we had overused this phrase because they wanted to get us to be polite and nice and so on. But the phrase goes that Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah, respect for others, which includes empathy for others, giving to others and so on, precedes, comes before Torah. Now, first of all, what does that mean? Derech Eretz is a part of Torah. What does it actually mean, right? But what it really means at its depth is that if you want to have a relationship with God, if you want to be spiritual, if you want to keep the mitzvot of the Torah, you need to be able to make room for another person. To make room for another person means that I'm humble. To make room for another person means that I'm not locked in myself, that I have that beam that can be flexible, that I can put myself to a side and make room for another person. If I can do that to another person, then I can do that to God as well. I can make room for God. I can make room to serve God and do mitzvot the way God wants him to do, not just the way I do it. Not just the way I want to do it, but the way to do it the way God wants me to do it, because I'm in a mode, I'm in a mindset, I'm in a paradigm of flexibility, of growth, of going beyond myself. Which of course, and I'm sure I've shared this with you before, but it's a famous explanation, it doesn't bring it in the chapter, but it's a famous explanation that Rabbi Shnei Zalman of Ladi, in the book of Tanya, brings the first Chabad Rebbe, a famous explanation about the story of Shammai and Hillel, where a convert, I'll just say briefly because I think I've shared it with you before, but when a convert came to Shammai and said, I want to convert, but I want you to teach me the entire Torah on one foot, and Shammai dismissed him. And then he came to Hillel, and Hillel says, no problem, and he put up his foot, and Hillel says, what you don't like done to yourself, don't do to other people. Always be sensitive to others, be kind to others, be generous to others. That's the entire Torah. The rest is commentary. And of course, the commentaries ask, what do you mean the rest is commentary? I understand, you know, the Torah is made up of two parts, the mitzvot that we do for other people and the mitzvot between man and God. So how's, understand when you say this phrase of be kind or don't do to others what you don't want done to yourself is the foundation of all the interpersonal mitzvot. But what's it got to do with the mitzvot of between me and God? And the answer is very simple. The answer is because when you are truly generous to others, not just you give charity once in a while, or you do favors once in a while because it's part of your checklist, right? A lot of people do that. They know that their conscience, the conscious part of their image, or part of their way of living, or part of it. It's also good, by the way, never to undermine any act of kindness that people do, as we've said. But being a really kind person is not just putting on the checklist that once in a while I need to give charity or help someone or visit someone and so on and so forth. Real kindness means empathy, being sensitive to others, having a heart of kindness, be making room for others, understanding their needs, and so on. If we can do that, then it is the foundation of the entire Torah. Because if we can make room for another person, we can make room for God as well. In conclusion, however, and this is probably the most important part, God designed us not always to be like that, as we said before. And therefore, the point that he wants to make over there in the chapter is that being charitable is a learned trait. It is not always easy. True generosity, true kindness. Right? Because it means, as we said before, it means suppressing part of us, putting to aside, training part of us, the selfish part of us, and getting in touch with a selfless spark that we have within us that needs modeling. It needs education and it needs practice. It doesn't just come naturally. You know, it's a difficult thing. I'll just share with you a memory that comes to mind. The last time that I was in South Africa to visit my grandfather of blessed memory, Rabbi Eloy, many, many years ago. He wasn't so well, I remember, and he had Parkinson's, advanced Parkinson's. He wasn't so well. I was married already here living in Australia. And when I visited New York, I came back to Sydney via South Africa and I wanted to visit him because I knew that things are getting on and I don't know if I'll have the opportunity again and so on. And the last day I was there for a few days. I went into his room to say goodbye to him. And he said to me, I want to give you a present. I'm really appreciative you came specially to visit me and I want to give you a present. And he took out a checkbook and he wanted to write me a check. And I said, you don't need to. I came, but he insisted to give me a present. Fine. So, and he was really quiet. Oh, it was hard for him to talk, but he had a wealth of stories. And I remember him telling me, as he signed the check and he tore it out of the checkbook, he says, it reminds me of a story. And he told me the following story. That was like the last story I heard from him directly when I was there. He said that one time the Chofetz Chaim, the saintly Chofetz Chaim, I mentioned him before, he went to collect money from someone for a very important cause. Someone was in real need. And he says he went to visit someone. He visited someone who was quite wealthy. And the person, you know, the Chofetz Chaim spoke to him and he had such respect for the Chofetz Chaim. And he could not give. So he wrote him a check. He wrote out a check. When he finished writing the check, he said to the Chofetz Chaim, I'm sorry, but could you tear out the check from the book? So Chofetz Chaim said to him, why? Why? I mean, I don't mind, but why? He says, I just can't do it. I'll give you the money. I can't bring myself to tear out the check. Now, it's very extreme, but we need to reflect on sometimes where it's hard for us to give. It's hard for us to give, and we have to train ourselves. So, you know, that's true with parents. It's parents and children. It's a very, very important to find ways to... But all of us have to practice kindness. And just to end off, Dr. Pelkowitz brings recommendations, just little ideas how to foster the concept of chesed. So firstly, he talks about volunteering. Volunteering is a really good thing to do, but he says, and he also talks about how to do it with school children, but he says it's very important not just to do it once in a while. It's important for people to sort of find ways of helping people on an ongoing basis. So he talks about the value of volunteering. But he also talks about kindness exercises, and he quotes from Dr. Martin Seligman, of course, one of the fathers of modern positive psychology, that he says that people should every single day wake up and think to themselves, what kind of active, random acts of kindness could I do today? It might be bringing food to someone. It might be, I don't know, it might be something. He talks about a story that Seligman says that he saw a long, long line in a post office because stamps had gone up or something and people were going up and there were people, a long, long line of people wanting to buy stamps. So just one day he went to the post office, bought lots of stamps and he gave them out for free. Just a silly act of kindness. Why? Just to do something positive. In other words, like everything else, it trains us. You know, that the we have in Jewish tradition, the Lubavitcher Rebbe used to emphasize this a lot. The concept of having a tzedakah box at home, right? And dropping some coins in it every single day. Now the truth is, why can't we just once a week give a nice amount? So he used to explain, no, it's not enough. We have to do it every day because just the act of giving is an important thing. Obviously, as we said last time, practicing focusing on people. Focusing on listening to people. All those things cultivate kindness, but it doesn't come naturally. Real kindness means to be really kind, means to really go out of ourselves, and that takes practice, both in behavior, like random acts of kindness, in mindset, in thinking about it, in learning it, and hopefully progressing and growing in that whole foundation of existence, which is the concept of kindness. And I said before that there's no better time to reflect upon this because being in the 9 days where people, the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed because of baseless hatred, which essentially means the concept of lack of empathy, lack of sensitivity, lack of going beyond ourselves, lack of being so insecure that we cannot tolerate someone, there's no better time to think about how kind we are. Are we generous enough? But generous in a way where we actually are empathetic and really listening to other people and sensitive to their needs. And looking out for people who might need support, even if no one knows about it, and doing those acts of kindness, and hopefully bringing the redemption that much more quicker to be very, very soon. Now, I just want to point out, next week, Thursday, is Tisha B'Av, but I was thinking, there's no reason we cannot learn, especially we're doing it on Zoom, there's no prohibition of learning at Tisha B'Av, so I'm going to continue with the regular lecture, because the chapter I want to do also is connected in a different way to the concept of how we care for others and how we resolve conflict and so on and so forth. And there could be no better time to talk about that than Tisha B'Av. So next Thursday morning, 9:20 in the morning, same time, probably same place, in front of your own computer. And in the meantime, have a wonderful day and a wonderful week. All the best, everyone. You're very welcome. Thank you.